All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the House of the Risen Sun. Oh, and if I put my mic in front of my mouth, people can hear.
That sounds even better. Surprise, surprise.
It's a new headset.
Ah, okay.
I got it for this trip, so it seems to work pretty good.
Yeah, the sound quality is good. Yeah.
All right, so we're looking at FAQ 1217 from the FACIMOutreach.org, and that's the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And these are the wonderful questions and answers that over the years, I believe Ken Wapnick and I don't know, maybe Gloria did some, and Jeff and Laurel and Rosemary.
I think there was another person too whose name I need to look up that is not a name that I hear very often that actually did quite a bit of these. I'll have to look that up and post that on the blog post that I make of this. There's one individual whose name rarely gets mentioned that I think contributed greatly to these.
Oh, interesting.
And it wasn't a name that you mentioned because I'm familiar with all those and I would have remembered them. But I'll look that up and get back to you.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and read the question.
Okay, all right.
And we will concentrate on the answer.
Sounds good. Okay. This is FAQ number 1217, as you pointed out, from FACIMOutreach.org, the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, the Frequently Asked Questions list. And it starts out with, years ago, during an intense time of spiritual searching, but prior to my introduction to A Course in Miracles, I had a stunningly realistic dream in which I was standing in a field looking at a black portal in the sky being held open by two beings whom I couldn't see and being urged by a third unseen spirit to pass through to the beautiful light beyond. I remember experiencing stark terror, a mortal fear, at the prospect of somehow getting through all that darkness by myself. The gentle but firm coaxing I understood to be from Jesus, who told me that others had gone before to be met with untold happiness, and I could do so as well, but that no one could do it for me. My question is this: was the terror I felt at the thought of passing permanently through that darkness related to a concern of my individuality being annihilated? And if so, please explain the concept of self. In Lesson 84, Jesus encourages us to say, quote, "I will worship no idols, nor raise my own self-concept, with a little s, or self, to replace myself, with a big s, self." The Course teaches that in the real world, we have no individuality as we think of it now. In light of that, please explain the concept of self, capital S self, to which he refers in this quote. So there's the question. It's a good open-ended one, isn't it?
Yeah. What is the concept of self? And that's the big ass self or the big ass self. Anyway, so he's asking, what is that? And I think that's honestly, if we really understood what that was, we would never fight it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're kind of like Steve Martin on that old SNL skit. You know, what is that dang deal? You know?
What is that dang deal?
What is that big capital S self? You know, because we're so enmeshed in our little s personal, temporal, spatial, you know, individuality fixated self that we're, for the most part, clueless. And that's why, you know, I think this quote really alludes to how the fact that, you know, to be met with untold happiness, you know, to go beyond this stark terror. Well, the stark terror and the blackness, of course, is the unacknowledged darkness of the self, the little s self that we made up, huh? I mean, that's the craziness of it, is that we don't even realize that we're having this nightmarish dream that really is a terrifying one, because we threw away everything that's real in that dream And I've identified with it, and no wonder we're, you know, shaking in our boots, you know, even if we don't acknowledge that most of the time, and sad and lonely and in constant peril, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and it's this, you know, I'm going to tell a story that probably doesn't seem to relate in any way at all, but it actually so impressed me, and this was long before I ever studied A Course in Miracles, long before I ever thought that I was living in a world that was not my home, even though I always felt that way, but most of us do. But there was a long time ago, back in, I don't know, the 80s, there was a little girl was kidnapped by some guy, and so I think she was like a 3 or 4 year old little girl. She was kidnapped by some guy, and you know, they searched and searched for her, and one day some campers were going to they were out in the national park, and they went to one of the little porta potties that they have set up. It was not really a porta potty; it was an outhouse kind of thing that they had set up for, you know, people there. And they heard someone crying, and they looked down in the hole of the porta potty, and this person had put this little girl down in the hole in the porta potty. So there's not the porta potty, but an actual outhouse. So there was a hole dug underneath of it or something. Yeah. So when he looked down there, and he said, "What are you doing down there?" And she said, "I live here now." And it struck me that's what she thought. She thought she had been taken from her parents and, you know, put in a shithole, and that she lived here now. And it just was, that's us.
That's kind of tragicomic, isn't it? It's so absurd that it's sort of funny, but it's also obviously ridiculously mean-spirited.
Right.
Yeah.
But what is it? You know, she thought she belonged there. She thought that was, you know, for some reason it was her fault, and that, you know, the things that, you know, little children think when they're put into some place that's horrible, and the only way that they can cope with it is to say, well, this is my life. This is what is real for me. This is what, you know, I expect, I deserve, or whatever. Right, and that's right. Us going through this life. We are in a shithole, and we are saying, you know, this is my home. This is where I belong. Instead of, you know, recognizing I don't belong down here. This is a shithole. I belong up there in the light with you guys. So that's, you know, that's how I think we cope with this life and this veil of tears and all this stuff. And Christianity, I grew up believing that, you know, if I was good while I was in the shithole, that eventually I would be let out and be able to go to heaven, which was my real home. You know, that's not far from the truth, actually. But, you know, it's just a different way of looking at it. So, anyway, so we live in the shithole, and, you know, we think we belong here, and so we can't identify with the self that doesn't live there, the self that doesn't belong there. We can only identify with the little self that lives in the shithole. So, and I love being on Gather, and I can say shithole all I want, and nobody's going to red dot me for it. But that's a whole other thing.
No CBS censors like Colbert has, right?
Exactly. So, the answer, first of all, your interpretation of your dream sounds pretty accurate, including your observation that your fear of is of loss of your individual self at the thought of passing beyond the darkness into the light. Our egos would like for us to believe that we are really afraid of the darkness, the seemingly impenetrable clouds of guilt that we have made real by our investment in the thought of separation as sin. But that is the cover for the real fear, the fear of oneness. And, you know, I know people will say, well, I'm not afraid of oneness, and I want oneness, and that's really what I want. But think about our reactions to things like Star Trek and the Borg. if you understand my reference. The Borg is the collective in which there is no individual self, and whenever you become absorbed into the Borg, you lose your sense of individual self and become involved with the life of the hive. That's terrifying to people to think that that could happen, even though the hive, the collective itself, is, you know, completely caring and taking care of you, and, you know, there's nothing but peace. People who are absorbed by the Borg actually are not in conflict, except for Jean-Luc Picard, because they don't remember their individual self. Or, there's so many, the Puppet Masters. Remember that movie? This kind of alien takes over people and makes them a part of the hive or the collective. And then they lose their individual self. These are stories that when we look at them, it terrifies us. You know, we're scared to death of the Puppet Masters. We're scared to death of, you know, anything that's going to take away the individual self, even if it, the actual, what is left is nothing but peace and joy, which, you know, you see that in especially the Puppet Masters thing where, you know, the people who are under the influence of these things, other than trying to recruit others through some diabolical plot, people who are into that are connected and happy and, you know, feel, you know, completely purposeful and, you know, and the people who are not are like terrified and fighting it and you know, doing everything they can to overcome it. That's more truth than fiction, I think. So the fear of oneness is a fear of losing the individual self. It is the fear of being overcome, overtaken, and no longer being who we are. And we've spent a lot of time crafting this vision of who I am, crafting this person of who I am, that, you know, I've worked hard on this. I don't want to lose it, even if it is crap. You know, I want it to be mine. So the fear of oneness is something that, you know, I think everyone has to address in themselves. You know, is this really what I want? Because unless it's really what you want, you are not going to do anything to try to get it. You're going to fight it tooth and nail. So that's my take on this particular question. And I will stop and let you read the next paragraph or discuss what we just said.
Sure. Yeah, and yeah, there's actually another metaphor that's similar to the one that you gave at the outset that is very similar, actually, is kind of like we've fallen into a dumpster. And instead of climbing out, you know, we've become so comfortable and so familiar and so identified with that we, you know, start decorating the dumpster. You know, we hire an interior decorator and go to great lengths to try to make that passable. And it's just silly, isn't it? Because, you know, that's not really where we belong. And yet the unconscious guilt that makes it seem like that's what, like you were saying, was something we deserve, you know, makes us fearful, you know, of that idea. Unlike some of these sci-fi stories where the collective mind isn't always necessarily completely benevolent, what Of Course in Miracles is addressing is that the capitalist self that is being talked about here is the completely inclusive, completely benevolent, completely kind awareness that we all share, that we have made so many excuses and justifications and grievances against ourselves that we project out, and we've painted that capitalist self with the brushes of the ego's thinking, and why wouldn't we be afraid of that? You know, seen from that perspective, where it basically seems to be annihilation, and yet what never existed is the little s self that's doing all that blathering against the capitalist self, because it has no concept of that perfect oneness. And so how could it do anything but rail against that awareness in a very fearful way, and that it doesn't like to even acknowledge the fear as its core thought process. But anyway, so I'll go ahead and read the next paragraph here, which says, "The self with which we identify is the false individual self we have made for ourselves by joining with the illusory ego to prove that the separation is real and that we are limited and tiny and vulnerable. The body serves this purpose quite nicely. There are, in fact, many layers to this false self, as the section self-concept versus self, which is chapter 31 in the text, section 5, makes clear. Our self, as the Course uses the concept, is our true identity as Christ, the Holy Son of God, who remains one with the Father, untouched and unaffected by any illusory thoughts of separation, sin, and guilt." And then there's a couple of workbook references here to workbook lessons 95 and 201. Ultimately, even words and concepts such as these are illusory, for they remain within a dualistic framework, but point to something beyond. There is no self that can be defined apart from God. But while we believe in a separate self with all its limiting self-concepts, the concept of a self, capital S self, which ultimately is beyond all concepts, provides a helpful correction for the false beliefs with which we have circumscribed ourselves. So we just basically need to at our own pace, at whatever you know rate and curriculum is comfortable to us, and we have all made on some level we're not even aware of a script and a set of scenarios that we call our life through this world that provides us with the perfect, I always like to think kind of like mathematically precise and absolutely flawless curriculum that feeds to us as feedback the unconscious guilt projected that we projected out, given back to us to then heal through forgiveness. And we get to see that identity that we thought we trashed, it can be restored to us when we forgive the grievances and the victimhoods and all that kind of craziness that seems to perpetuate the separate interests that just are no fun.
Yeah, they're no fun. That's a good way to put it. And I think I'm not sure. If this question is, going to be answered in this way at all. But what I've noticed is that when I recognize the damage that the personal self does on a regular basis to myself and the world, in just looking at, how many preferences I have, how many desires I have, and, there... The problem in the world is that it is not a have give all to all world. It's not a teach peace to learn it world. It's a world that is really, let me point out how flawed everything is so that I can feel better about myself. And yet I can't feel good about myself because all I do is look at everything else and see how flawed it is. So mm-hmm. it's a perpetual self-feeding cycle of madness. And you can't help it if you are caught up in your own personal self and your own relationship to the world, because there is not a single thing that gives us any pleasure that endures for more than a moment. I mean, not a single pleasure mm-hmm. that endures more than the moment. So, I'm loving eating this piece of, rich chocolate cake. And I'm hating myself for eating a beautiful, rich piece of chocolate cake because, I know it's going to make me fat and it's probably going to give me a tummy ache and it's, you know, and children are starving in the world, and there's any pleasure that you take from anything is very temporary, very limited, and always comes with guilt. Mm-hmm. There is not a pleasure in this world, and I, you know, if you can come up with one for me that is, that lasts beyond the moment, and that doesn't come with a big helping of guilt, there's nothing. I have found nothing. Even the love of a child, even, you know, loving a puppy dog or, you know, anything sweet, there's always that thought in the back of your mind that something bad could happen to them, that, you know, they're going to grow up or they're going to die or, you know, there's always the thought in your mind of what, the, you know, they say the other shoe drop, you know, that something bad is going to happen. And that's why we hold on to those thoughts, those joys, is because they are so fleeting. They appear to be precious because they're so few and far between. And we try to milk them and nurse them and remember them and carry them through our lives. And remember when we did this and remember our wedding day, you know, when we're, you know, getting divorced or in an ugly fight, you know, we don't. The pleasures that came before have lost their joy, and we really, and this is in general, you know, there may be people who don't experience this, but it's not been my experience. My experience has always been that no matter what I took joy in, I knew it was temporary. I knew that it was, that it would not last. And that the sweetness of it would somehow destroy me. There's always that belief because of guilt. So this personal self is not fun. This personal self is not nice. It just leads to more guilt and shame, and it leads to more fear and loss. So, wow.
Yeah. So, I was just going to say, as you were mentioning all the fleeting pleasures, I think there's kind of the stereotypical ones, you know, food, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, kind of the cliches, if you will. But there's also ones that are more subtle and more insidious in a way. Not that there's anything wrong with anything that we do behaviorally or don't do. Because, you know, as our beloved curriculum reminds us, that anything in the world involving space and time is a dream. So why should we make a big deal out of it? But I think we can certainly begin to look, as we generalize these things, and say, well, gee, am I deriving pleasure when I check everything off my to-do list on a given day? Or if I feel like, wow, I really did a good job on such and such, or I got to, you know, say what I wanted to say to, you know, a certain person or group of people, or you know, make myself heard, or all those kind of things that have to do with more mental than physical aspect. Those can just as easily be tricks that our egos can try to lure us into the idea that, basically the bottom line is, I pulled one over on God. I made yes. a world in which my happiness is now not contingent on anything that is all inclusive. But it is contingent on specifics. And once we have anything specific that has power over our mind, and we've given it that power, of course, we're basically saying that the little s self is in control. And the only possible outcome of that is continued fear, because if the honesty that is behind the ego's dishonesty is that the little s self can in no way be at peace, because it was presumably wrested from and stolen from this perfect oneness that we thought we shattered. And how could we possibly have any kind of real fulfillment or real peace from that? And we just don't. And we just don't.
Yeah.
That's the craziness of it.
Yeah, and all of those things, when you look at them in the world, they all come with a hefty serving of guilt. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, there's always something, because I can't have something that I don't share with you that I can feel at peace with. There's nothing that I can be at peace with if I'm holding it for the personal self. And so if I'm enjoying my ice cream, like I said, you know, I know people are looking at my ice cream and wanting it, or I know that children are starving. I mean, that's kind of, you know, not really on the top of our minds for the most part, but, you know, unless you grew up in a Catholic family and you were guilted about every pleasure you ever had, because, you know, let's face it, earthly pleasure is against God's will. That's really... We're really how we're taught to believe, because we are sinners and we don't deserve the pleasure that we are deriving from whatever. And so that's why they call it sinful, you know, sinless. You know, there's one of my favorite ice cream is called, what is it, sinless something or the other, because it doesn't have any sugar in it and doesn't have any fat in it. And so, you know, there's not your, what you're eating is completely artificial, and yet it tastes just as good. And so you think you've overcome the sin of it because it's not going to make you fat, or it's not.
So it's actually a homeopathic tincture of ice cream. Is that it?
Yes, it's homeopathic.
Microscopic amounts of ice cream essence.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And it's a thought of it. It's a thought of ice cream. Really, it is. And actually, the thought of these things is more pleasant. The thought of these things has more joy, because when we actually have these things, it is so short-lived. And again, you know, I can hardly wait for my wedding day. We're always looking forward to these pleasures. And then when we're in the middle of having the pleasure, we're looking forward to the pleasure being over and, you know, looking back on it, wishing we still had it. Even sex, even, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, how many times are we just absolutely absorbed in what's happening right now and loving it for what it is, which is really the only way that you can actually have pleasure. Because otherwise you're caught in that cycle of past and future. You know, I didn't have this before, now I have it, and, you know, I'm not going to have it tomorrow or in the next instant. And so there's time really does a number on us as far as joy. You know, you can only be joyful now. And so the whole idea of time and space really separates our joy. I mean, there's just so much about it. And, you know, why am I talking about, why are we talking about this stuff? Because to understand that is not what I want. You know, that what I really want is the all pleasure all the time option, which is not possible in this physical world of form. And so, you know, it's just not going to happen. And the little small self can only enjoy small pleasure, small joy, small happiness. It's very, very limited. And so if there was any reason that you would not want to be identified with that little small self, one reason is that anything good that happens is just so temporary. And the Son of God will not be satisfied with temporary love. It has to be the whole thing or nothing at all. And unfortunately, what we're getting here is nothing at all. It's sad, but go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it reminds me of that John Denver song, you know, the about Toledo, Ohio is like being nowhere at all. You know, that kind of crossed my mind the other day. But that's actually ego's location is nowhere at all, because it really is a self that, it, like you say, strives for pleasure, but at the same time rails against it and says, no, I don't deserve this. So it's really the essence of conflict, because there's, how can anything apart from oneness be anything but conflict? And so the idea is to generalize when we do recognize that both the pain and the pleasure as we define them, don't work for us. They're neither good nor bad, as Shakespeare said. But they're just, like Ken Lopnick says, they're just silly. And eventually, when we see that they're the same, that what we think are good and bad experiences in terms of bodily or the psychological self, which is, you know, again, the other side or the inner shield of oblivion, with the physical being the outer, that psychological satisfaction that is not really true fulfillment in the sense that it's all inclusive and unchanging, that temporary fix, there's never a complete fulfillment there. And I think that is really a very helpful thing, in that it always reminds us that there's an awareness that we've never left in some aspect, some awareness that in our mind, we know we've never left that perfect oneness and we can return to it. And the way we do that is through looking moment to moment at our choice against it and seeing that we can forgive ourselves for appearing to have made that choice. Do you want to read the next couple of short paragraphs?
Yeah, I'll read the next couple of short ones. Okay, so and so statements in the Course, such as the one you refer to in lesson 84, are meant to help us release or undo these false concepts so they can be first replaced with helpful concepts, which is the healed perception. And again, the word perception is used throughout the Course to refer to how we see things, how I experience things. And so perception is very temporary also, and actually not true, but at least to have a healed perception, I say at least, to have healed perception is to be able to see beyond the temporary nature of these things and to see that there is more, that is not as limited as our mind would tell us that it is. So the concepts can be replaced with helpful concepts, which is healed perception, and it's still a concept, of course, before we release all concepts and return to our reality of oneness, which is knowledge beyond all perception. And I love these words, knowledge beyond all perception, knowledge beyond what I can see and feel and taste and hear and know with this conceptual mind. And of course, the ego can't understand or know what beyond perception is, because perception is the only thing the ego knows. So the ego can't understand knowledge. That seems to be, something that's esoteric, way out there and beyond what I can know. So he says, and this one has a quote. Towards the end of the section, self-concept versus self, which is an excellent section of A Course in Miracles, really explains this very well. Self-concept versus self. Jesus provides a helpful contrast between the false self we have made with all its various faces and our true self, God's one creation beyond all concepts. And here's the quote from the Course. It says, the concept of the self with a little s has always been the great preoccupation of the world. Salvation, it sounds like Napoleon. Salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. seek not yourself with the big S in symbols. Don't look for the Christ in symbols. There can be no concept that can stand for what you are, and you will not perceive that you can interact but with yourself. You will make many concepts of the self as learning goes along. Each one will show the changes in your own relationships as your perception of yourself is changed. And I just want to stop right there, because this is pivotal here. The change in my relationships as my perception of myself is changed is such a shift that you don't even recognize yourself. It's like it's not even the same person that is in the relationship, you know, and it's almost like suddenly you're the grown up. It's suddenly you're the one who is seeing in the relationship your part in what makes the dynamic of it. You know, when I see in my relationships my own responsibility for what is there. So if I look at Donald Trump, you know, this is a relationship. I have a relationship with Donald Trump. Did you know that? Yeah, I do.
Everyone does. Because everyone has a relationship to everyone. I mean, that's a given, right?
Exactly. Now, I have a relationship with Donald Trump in which at one point I was looking at him and saying, what an obnoxious jerk. What kind of a creep is this guy? You know, he is, and you read it in the papers and you see it on the news and you see it on Facebook. And this relationship that we have with this character that, you know, we're seeing him as being the root of all evil, basically. And yet that is a relationship that for me has been healed. Because the perception of myself is so different that when I look at him, I just see, well, here's the guy, here's a character. And, you know, he's playing a part. That's not him. And the person who, you know, would react to him is not me. It's not what I am. And so it's easy to see him as being just like me, you know, the same hopes and fears and he's not a being that is foreign to me. In fact, I see in him everything that I see in myself. I see in his arrogance and his striving. You know, it may be bigger. It may be more blatant. It may be more in your face, but when I look at myself, I see myself with the same, very same characteristics. The small, the little Lynn is doing exactly the same thing that Donald Trump is doing. And maybe not on such a grandiose level, but, or braggadocious level, but it's still there. I'm still doing it. So as my concept of myself evolves and I see myself as healed and loving and forgiving and joyful, then, you know, what I see in him is, you know, it's an act. It's not even his real personality. And what you see is not really what is there ever in any other person. So as I accept the responsibility for what I see and accept that the only reason I see these things is because they're a part of my false personality and is only there. I mean, he's only there to show me what it is that I, what I'm doing. So it's the change in my own self-concept that is changing my relationship with everything in every person in the world. So salvation can be seen as nothing more than escape from concepts. Seek not yourself in symbols. don't look for the higher self in symbols, because there can be no concept that can stand for what you are, and you will not perceive that you can interact but with yourself. You know, that, and that's what I've been learning. It's only myself that I'm interacting with always. And so, and if I'm not loving Donald Trump, guess what that means? Those aspects of myself I'm not loving. If I'm hating Donald Trump, guess what? Those aspects of myself I'm hating. You know, this is you know, such a simple thing, but boy, you know, to accept that is really difficult. So you will make many concepts of the self as learning goes along. Each one will show the changes in your own relationships as your perception of yourself has changed. There will be some confusion every time there is a shift, but be you thankful that the learning of the world is loosening its grasp upon your mind, and be you sure and happy in the confidence that it will go at last and leave your mind at peace. Thank God. And then I'm thanking God for that. You know, I don't thank God for things in this world, but I'm sure as heck thanking God for for this, because I mean, without this, there could be no salvation, really. Mm-hmm. There will come a time when images have all gone by, and you will see you know not what you are. It is to this unsealed and open mind that truth returns, unhindered and unbound. And oh, this is so beautiful. Where concepts of the self have been laid by is truth revealed exactly as it is. There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this: I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or on myself. Yet in this learning is salvation born, and what you are, the true self, the uppercase self, will tell you of itself. So this is what happens when I lay my self concepts aside, when I come to the point where I'm like, I don't, you know, am I the person that hates Donald Trump? I don't know. And when I recognize I just don't know, then the truth can come into my mind, because I've undone the block to that awareness of that.
Yep. Yeah, as you were saying, a number of things came to mind about certainly the whole political situation in this country right now, and how, you know, we're all projections for each other. And in any given moment, we're either expressing love or a call for love. And so some seem more evident than others and more blatant. But the behavior really is, in a sense, irrelevant to what the Course is directing us to, is back to the mind, and on the level of the mind the Course is wanting us to look at, which is the capital S self, we can then see from an infinitely compassionate point of view that we're looking at a projected part of our own awareness, that our own, you know, the consciousness that we made of duality that's seems to be foisted, you know, and hurled out from our what we call ourself, the little s, and becomes this other self. And so there can appear to be conflict or differences of opinion or behavior or whatever, and yet it's all the same self. So if we take objection and feel victimized by or upset about any other person, including political figures, we're forgetting the whole nature of projection, and that is what gets us into so much trouble, but it's all undoable just by forgiving ourselves and remembering to see that we're all in the same boat. We're all deserving of that same compassion. Doesn't necessarily mean we have to vote for a particular candidate, because again, that's talking about behavior. So, you know, being kind can take and often does take the form of behaving in a way that makes sense, in a somewhat pragmatic manner, and an appropriate and usually kind-hearted matter. So it's totally independent of what the level that the course is addressing, which is the level of the mind, where we get to look at what am I projecting? What am I forgetting as part of myself? And that's where that capitalist self comes back into play. And also, I found, since you mentioned Trump, there's a really excellent article that I put in the Skype chat window, and I'll post on the post about this conversation, by D. Patrick Miller, who's the original publisher of Gary Renard's Disciplines of the Universe. And he writes a very well done article about projection I'll just quote here. Says, they can never work because they are part of us. For better or worse, we share one mind. I just, grabbed a sentence from the fourth or fifth paragraph of that article. But it's worth the read, and it goes into much greater detail about the nature of projection and how political candidates become perfect examples of how we can, return to mindfulness by looking at the things that we find objectionable. And and political candidates certainly are fair game and excellent classrooms for that.
Yeah, and it, all you have to do, if I want to know how I'm doing, that's all I want to know is how I'm doing. All I have to do is look on Facebook and look at any one of the people who, in the past I would have unfollowed or blocked here's something really kind of cool that happened, and I regard it as really as a miracle, because it is a true miracle, there was a fellow, and he was posting some stuff that, one of my major triggers is when anybody criticizes Ken Wapnick or the foundation, or says that the editing of the course was done without, Jesus being involved, or, those things that, a fundamentalist like me would be upset with, because it challenges the veracity of my teachers. It says that what I'm believing may not be true, and that somehow or the other what I think is true has been tainted by the actions of of another person outside of me. And so this person was posting this stuff, and I can't even remember exactly. Oh, they were asking about the atonement, or thinking that those things that somehow or the other people were misinterpreting that. Something that, they thought that Ken had added into the course, or something of that nature. And so I looked at that, and then, of course, first off, it made me angry, and I wanted to just, tell this guy, I didn't just want to tell this guy, you're wrong. I wanted to pummel this guy and beat him down until he believed that, I was, the crusade right there. I became the last crusade, I guess, in my mind. And and I did respond back to him with some, quote from the course or something. And then he responded back to me, wrong, this is this and this and this. And of course, the minute I saw that word wrong, I was even more incensed. And then I was just shocked at myself. It really took me aback, because, here I have this self-concept that I am, this loving person who really represents the teachings of Jesus, and, all that horse shit that, that we think about ourselves. And so, I was thinking, I can really get this guy, and I can really rip him with this. And I looked at that. I looked at the whole dynamic of in my own mind, and I realized, that attacking this person was not going to be helpful to either him or me. and that all it was going to do was add fuel to the fire and cause more and more mistakes and cause more and more anger and more slinging quotes at each other and, you know, all these things that, you know, we gentle, kind Course in Miracles teachers and students do with each other. And and so I looked at that and I realized, oh, my God, I'm doing it myself. You know, I don't need, you know, anybody to be attacking because I'm already doing it myself. And, you know, when I recognized it, I actively said, you know, I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I need to, you know, be at peace. So I'm just, you know, please, Holy Spirit, you know, help me to just let go of this.
That and quote is so, on my wall, by the way.
yeah, I'll tell you what, that's like saved my life in so many ways. That's from chapter 5, the last section, which is the decision for God. Very, very important section. So I did that. I went through that little process and then I just went back and I just wrote something heartfelt, loving and gentle that was without that judgment, without that fear, without that belief that, you know, if I let one person overstep their bounds there, that it was going to cause, you know, that we would not be able to accept the atonement or whatever crap I was believing. And I just changed my mind about it. And when I went back, he had deleted his comments and said, thank you, you're absolutely right. And it was like a sudden just peace, not because he said I was absolutely right, but because I was at peace. And I recognized that peace that I had come to had shifted him as well. And that...
I was going to say, just getting the cause and effect relationship in the right place. The cause is your peace. The effect, in this case, happened to be an acknowledgement, seemingly from an external source, but it was just really giving form to the decision in your mind that you'd already made.
Exactly. It was just an affirmation that was, you know, that I wasn't in hell. I wasn't lost. You know, I hadn't lost everything. And I could choose again. And what a relief that was.
Alrighty. Shall I read the last paragraph?
Sure.
Okay. When you experience yourself as having an opportunity to pass through the darkness to the light, your ego interpreted that as the path to self-annihilation, as it tried to persuade you that this self is something, which, of course, we know it's really nothing. The fear you experienced is what Jesus makes reference to when he speaks of, quote, no statement the world is more afraid to hear. And some of those other statements that in the previous paragraph seem very reminiscent of a lot of Eastern mystical traditions with presenters like Nisargadatta, Ramana Maharshi, Krishnamurti, some of those kind of folks, where they, you know, continually ask us to, you know, examine, you know, what is this self? What is this alleged self that we are so identified with? And you know, the idea being that we're not going to, and I think A Course in Miracles does this very eloquently as well, is it asks us to look at the capital S self, not directly, but indirectly by removing the barriers to the, you know, to love's awareness that we've appeared to have made, and then forgiving ourselves for identifying with that decision making for that decision, and realizing that we don't have to do that anymore. That's no longer workable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all it does is hurt. It's just painful.
Yeah. And then the paragraph concludes with, while we still value the little false self, we will be afraid of anything that is dismissive of that self. And so we will approach the Course with ambivalence and fear, for ultimately its purpose is to teach us but one thing, summed up in a simple statement that comes near the very end of the workbook. And this is the quote from workbook lesson 358. Let me not forget myself is nothing. the lowercase s in the self. But myself, capital S, is all. And there we have it.
There we have it. And that's beautiful. And it's just, it really is that simple. It really is that simple, is lay down your arms. Just lay down your arms. Just recognize that there's nothing to defend. But that, you know, it comes from, for me, years of struggling with the idea that there is something to defend. That the idea that, I could justify that, you know, well, Jesus said that, you know, as long as one slave is left in this world, that we will not all be free. And so how can I let you be enslaved by your false beliefs? All an idea that somehow there's a me that can be affected by a you, when in reality there is no me and there is no you, and that, you know, what he's really talking about is just the concept of me that is projecting out into all the yous in the world. And, you know, if I bring it back every single time to me and my own thinking, and let you off the hook, recognize that you have done nothing but reflect to me what my thinking is. And another thing that comes up to me a lot is where Jesus says that you have made an ego for everyone and for yourself. So I'm, you know, the person I think is saying these crazy things is my own perception. It's my own picture of that person. You know, I'm not seeing Donald Trump, the being that he is. I'm seeing my picture. I'm seeing the caricature of him. I'm not seeing Bruce as he is. I'm seeing the picture that I have in my mind of Bruce. I made that up. And so if Bruce says something I don't like, I made that up. It really is me. I'm really the one who's making up all of it. Now, you know, people say, well, you didn't make me up. I am what I am. Well, no. What I see is what I made up. What other people see is what they made up. I don't see you the same way your mother sees you. I don't see you the same way your ex-wife sees you. I don't see you the same way the stranger on the street sees you, because we're all making up the Bruce that we see. And I'm the one who's saying Bruce is benevolent and kind and loving, whereas, you know, the...
I'm working, you know, on
the
it.
Person, yeah. the person who you just cut off in traffic when you're driving down and you're not even paying attention, you know, you just need to get in that other lane and don't realize you're cutting somebody off. You're being your innocent self, and the other person is seeing you as being an evil person or a bad person, or you've done something wrong to me. It's all my perception. And so, you know, the whole idea of perception, once, you know, I started getting into seeing that really I was the one that was making up and giving all the meaning to everything that I saw, which, you know, it took a while. You know, it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to actually know that I'm doing it. But as I have done that, what I've seen then is that every single person that presents anything to me is really presenting me a lesson about myself, a lesson about what I think I am. And when I let go of, you know, that, oh, you know, she's so selfish, or he is so rude, you know, that's my thoughts. My thoughts are selfish and rude. And it's not, you know, it's not blame myself. Just look at that and recognize it and say, but that's not my real self. That's not my real thoughts. That's not really how I feel and think. And to let those things go, then everything becomes so much clearer. And I can look at these things, that these people that seem to be doing terrible stuff, and recognize, you know, they're not really doing it. And that is one thing since I've been here in Vancouver. You know, I never watch television when I'm at home. It's just I don't have time for it in general. But since I've been here, I've been watching television, and we've been watching things like Law and Order, and, you know, every single show on television seems to be about guilt and evil and, you know, good overcoming that evil. And, you know, I look at these characters and recognize that, you know, it's the same character that I see when I look at the news, when I look at, you know, Facebook, when I walk down the street. I'm seeing these characters, and in the end, those actors go home. You know, they leave the character. They don't take the character with them. You know, when they go home, the bad guy doesn't go home in from the movie and act like the bad guy in the movie. Because that's not who he is. It's a character, and it's a part of the story. And so when, you know, but I'm still carrying that character in my mind in assigning guilt. So, you know, I need to let it go. You know, he went home to his family or his friends or whatever and forgot the character. I am still here believing and remembering the character. I'm the one that needs to let that go and let him be free. Make not of my brother an enemy. What is that quote? I can't remember exactly, but it is, you know, it's
well,
all
you said
about.
It pretty well just there.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's what a gift this course.
Yeah,
is.
It really is. It really is. Yeah. So, yeah, the enemy, of course, is really just the misinterpretation of our own projection and looking at the capitalist self, as this FAQ suggests, we have an opportunity to address the fear, see where our resistance is to looking at that at our own pace and slowly but surely learning to generalize and release our investment in a dysfunctional lowercase s self. Identity that doesn't work for us, and that's where the real peace is that doesn't change, and the undescribable untold happiness that the the question referred to at the beginning of our conversation today. So, anyway, thank you so much, Lynn, and I always enjoy these conversations, and look forward to more. So,
and next week I'll be back home.
Okay.
I believe that's the plan anyway, is I'll be back in Colorado and we'll be in the same time zone.
That sounds good. Yeah, I will have gone to Portland and back by then. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're going to Portland now. Boy,
yep.
I'll tell you. So, are you speaking in Portland or are you?
No, this is just a purely social trip. So it'll just be kind of a goof off kind of a thing.
All right. So, well, we have friends out there. So I know you have friends out there.
Yep.
So give them all my love.
Will do.
All right.
Have a great week all. And thanks as always, Lynn.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. And now I need to log into my other computer to, okay, there it is. All right. All right. Thanks you all for joining us in the House of the Rising Sun, or actually the Risen Sun. Yeah, I changed the name because I think the Risen Sun is more accurate. So we're the House of the Risen Sun, and I love you guys, and thank you all. Thank you, Bruce, and I'll see you next week.
Have a great one, all.
All right. Bye-bye.